Hello, and welcome to this episode of the BDNG podcast. My name is Julia Wheeler, and I'm the Educational Development Nurse for the BDNG. We hope you enjoy listening to this series and find them beneficial to your practice. This first series of podcasts are sponsored by Almirall. Almirall has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced by the British Dermatological Nursing Group. During today's podcast, we aim to introduce you to the work of the Burma Skincare Initiative, a charity that the British Dermatological Nursing Group is very, very proud to support, as well as being actively involved with their work, having supported them with their first conference in February 2020, which you'll hear about a little later in this podcast. And we look forward to continuing to support them in the future. My name's Lucy Moorhead, and I'm a nurse consultant in inflammatory skin disease at Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital, and I'm also a trustee of the British Dermatological Nursing Group. And I'd like to introduce today Professor Chris Griffiths and Dr Sue Lewin. Prof Griffiths and Sue, would you like to introduce yourselves?
Well, thank you very much, Lucy. I think people probably know who I am, but I'm Professor Chris Griffiths. I'm Professor of Dermatology and a consultant dermatologist in Manchester. And I've had a long interest, of course, in inflammatory skin disease, but over recent years become much more interested in global health, which is what's led to this podcast today, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lucy, for having us today. I'm very excited about this podcast today. Unlike Professor Chris Griffiths, many people won't know me, and I am Dr. Sue Marluin, Burmese-born dermatologist working at St. John's Institute of Dermatology. I'm a registrar there and also do research on the side. I had the privilege to co-found the Burma Skincare Initiative charity with Professor Chris Griffiths in 2018, and I look forward to discussing further with you about the BSI.
Brilliant, thanks very much. So I guess to start off with, many of our listeners, and including myself before I became involved, might not know very much about Burma. So would it be possible to kind of give us a bit of a background to Burma and the sort of healthcare infrastructure that exists?
Absolutely, thank you for that question, Lucy. You're absolutely right. Many people know about the neighbouring countries much more than Burma itself, actually. And that's not surprising considering the country has been under military dictatorship since its independence from the British in 1948. So for the past 60 plus years, it had been rather secluded from the rest of the world. Despite the complex and political backdrop, it's a really beautiful country, not that I'm biased, but it's also known as the Golden Land. It's really diverse in its landscapes and also extremely rich in natural resources such as the gemstones. And you may have heard about the Burmese jade and the pigeon blood, as in the Burmese ruby. And unfortunately, because of the dictatorship, there has been systematic disinvestment in healthcare and education, and as a result, there is very little skincare throughout the country. And of course, it is situated in Southeast Asia. And more recent times, people may have read on the news about Burma in the context of the Rohingya plight of the Rohingyas refugees who fled Burma. And also more recently, the military coup that's taking place in the country, which we will discuss about later, I'm sure. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. I totally agree. I think, I was lucky enough to come out with you to the conference in February 2020. And I guess in my mind, I imagined it would be very similar to Thailand, which I visited, sort of 10, 15 years ago. But it was, as you said, a beautiful country, but very different and nothing of the sort of commercialism, et cetera, that you would see in Thailand.
Absolutely, Lucy. If I may add to that, that's a great point, because We were only able to hold that first ever international dermatology meeting there in February of last year, thanks to the Aung San Suu Kyi-led civilian government who got the power from the for the past decade until the coup took place, really. So there has been some changes and developments during that time.
And so what led you both to start this charity? Or how did you both meet?
Well, maybe I could begin, and I'm sure that Sue can fill in the gaps that I may well leave. But I guess the history of the Burma Skincare Initiative, this charity we've talking about today, was started in, of all places, Orlando in the United States at a meeting called the International Investigative Dermatology Meeting, which is a big international skin research meeting that occurs every 5 years. And in May of 2018, it happened to be in Orlando, Florida. And one of the great advantages, of course, of having meetings which have held face-to-face, it seems a sort of distant memory now, is that it's not just about what goes on in the lecture hall, it's about the discussions that take place afterwards, you know, at dinner and in bars, etc. And this is exactly what happened. Sue and I think, had met once before at one of the ESDR meetings, but only just very briefly. And we were just talking about life and talking about what we were doing with our careers, and started to discuss what I had an interest now in refugee health and migrant health, and doing some work in refugee camps. And Sue was talking about Myanmar, Burma, and I expressed an interest in traveling to Burma. I think that's true of many men of my generation, is that, and I think a lot of people from Britain of our generation, is that there's this romanticism around Myanmar and Burma. I think it's from the reading the books of Somerset Maugham, and and it's always that sort of mystery, and there still is a mystery about the country, as you've just heard from Sue, is that people can't really place it on a map. They've heard about it, but they know it's exotic and interesting, but where actually is it? And so, for a variety of reasons, we discussed that and then kept in touch. And then Sue very kindly asked whether I'd be willing, well, I was interested in accompanying her on a trip back home for her at the end of that year. And so we put together a program to visit a couple of the dermatology centers in Myanmar. And of course, there's only three dermatology centers in the country. A country, as you've heard, of over 50 million people, but less than 100 dermatologists, and that's including dermatology registrars as well as consultants. So we visited the department in Mandalay, in the center of the country, which was the original capital, and then one of the two dermatology centers in Yangon, which used to be known as Rangoon, and which is probably better known still as Rangoon. And we were impressed with the caliber of the doctors there, both from the two professors that we met and also their staff, and their knowledge and their thirst for knowledge. But at the same time, as you would have experienced yourself, Lucy, in your trip last year, the facilities are what we would think of as, in the UK at least, not optimal. Inpatient services, very, very rudimentary. And I think, Lucy, you went on, you visited one of the wards, didn't you, in Yangon General Hospital. And the access to medicines, access to biologics, for instance, really not very good. And saw some patients, we talked to these dermatologists, and when we came back, we felt that there's something we could help and make a difference to. And I know this has been Sue's real passion about giving something back to Myanmar and to Burma, and I think that in skincare we could do that. So in very short order, when we came back, we felt that we could start to found what then became the Burma Skincare Initiative charity. And founded on the three pillars, really, of education, research, and clinical service. And of course, the first two, and excellence in the first two, lead to excellence in clinical services. All nurses know it's part of that background knowledge that's in the learning that actually helps develop a very high caliber skin service. And so on the back of that, then we started to plan immediately. We got back really in the end of 2018 to go back out to Myanmar in early 2020 and to run a meeting, and we can talk further about that, but the first international dermatology meeting that's ever held in the country, and of course the first meeting for dermatology nurses that you participated in, Lucy. And so that's the sort of, that's the genesis of it. I think it's because the two of us shared and still do share this passion for making a difference. And it's not just it's making a difference to the people of Myanmar in general and promoting skincare excellence. And, you know, this, once one moves out of the big cities and even into the margins of the big cities, the healthcare and opportunities for healthcare are severely limited. And skincare itself is very much at the bottom of the list of priorities in the country because they have so many competing priorities. And we felt that with the connections that we'd already made in Myanmar and the connections we had nationally and internationally, we could work with, and this is the key thing, working with our colleagues in Myanmar, both nurses and doctors, to develop research and education, and as a consequence, improve clinical services, both diagnostic and management. But Sue, that's the sort of the background in a sort of broad background, but we can start to fill in some of the detail.
Absolutely, Chris. How many times have we spoken about the BSI to various, people through our work? But it never fails to amaze me how the three key ingredients that's actually played in this success, the success of the BSI. And I'm sure you'll agree with me that serendipity, shared passion, and determination are really key to all of these things, really. And of course, teamwork and collaboration are really crucial to make it sustainable. So if you would indulge me a bit about my background, a bit more sort of further back to being a registrar, because that's where my passion was born out of, actually. So I was born in Burma and I grew up in a small village called Jangin in the Irrawaddy Delta region. So, it's a sort of a rural area, a lot of farms, green fields and very romantic setting, as you can imagine. And I used to tell my friends that we always have romantic dinners every night because we have candlelit dinners every night. That's simply because there's no electricity. But, you learn to appreciate and romanticize these really basic things that we take for granted nowadays, I guess. And so in a way, I've been really privileged that I had that incredible childhood that my parents brought us up in that village. Green fields, pure moonlight, playing in the streets, wonderful. And then from there, we moved to the capital, Rangoon, which, as you saw, Lucy, was sort of quite the opposite, chaotic, buses, pollution, everything, and it's a vibrant city. And then from the age of 15, serendipitously, one of my dad's friends who went to medical school with, he came back to Burma. He lives in Wales in a small town called Carmarthen, Uncle Jimmy New. He then very kindly sponsored me to study in the UK. So again, by chance, I met him he was just visiting Burma back in 1996. And at that time, schooling education future was quite grim in Burma. And so then I came to the UK at the age of 15 and then went to school, did my GCSEs, A-levels, and quickly realized that, that in itself is a different story. But essentially, without the opportunity and without the people who helped me along the way, I wouldn't be where I am. So I truly value what opportunities mean in life. And now that I am in a position to be able to give back, that was really important for me to do that. So I've always had that desire, but you know, having that desire and the idea and being able to execute it successfully is a different matter. So I guess the time was ripe when I met Dean Professor Chris Griffiths, and I couldn't believe my luck when he said yes to my invitation. I said, would you like to go to Burma with me in December 2018? And that was the time when I was writing up my PhD thesis. So there were competing interests there in terms of my timing. And I said, you know what, it's now or never. So I just followed my passion and went with it. And actually, at that time, I didn't know anybody within dermatology in Burma. So I searched online, and then I saw this University of Medicine One, where you visited, Lucy, a website, and Professor Kainkain Zor, the lead dermatologist's email address was on the website. And I thought, okay, let me email her and explain, you know, what we would like to do. And she very, very kindly, you know, enthusiastically welcomed our proposal. I mean, you know, as well as I do, that, you know, in Burma, they rely on Facebook a lot. So there is a higher chance that I would have got a reply on Facebook compared to an email. But I guess we were very lucky that she replied back. She then organized for our visit, because to visit a department of dermatology in Burma, you require the approval from the Ministry of Health. So that required quite a bit of organization. And also I had to prove that it is legitimate. You know, I am actually bringing the Professor Chris Griffiths, and we can share the incident when we arrived at the Yangon General Hospital later on. But that's how we actually ended up in Burma in December 2018, and the rest is history, so to speak.
No, that's very interesting, and you're right. It's serendipity. You know, it's something that can be accountable for quite amazing sort of things happening. So it's really interesting. So, and then, do you want to talk a little bit more about your first trip to Burma and what led from there to the culmination in the conference in February 2020?
Absolutely. I think Chris should start, maybe, because that was your first time ever in Burma.
Yes, it was my first time ever in Burma, but somehow, as I alluded to, I felt I knew Burma, you know, just having read the books of Somerset Maugham and, of course, George Orwell. And it's an interesting sort of link here, is that you may not know this, but Somerset Maugham started out as a medical student at St. Thomas's Hospital. And his sort of, the way that he sort of learnt about human behaviour was not actually in his medical school lectures, it was by sitting on one of those benches, which is leads up from the Queen Victoria's statue in the main hall there, and just observing the people of Lambeth walking up and down. And it was his ability to translate those observations into the written word that convinced him that probably medicine wasn't the right career path for him after he qualified. And absolutely correctly, it was as a writer. And so when I arrived in, you know, I didn't know what to expect, I suppose. I guess there was a lot of, you know, discussion between Sue and myself as to whether I'd even get a visa, because I think Sue had quite a lot of difficulties with visas in the past. And so anyway, I got a visa, and to her amazement, you know, I applied for it. And I think the next day they issued it to me, which immediately, I think Sue thought there must be something not quite right about this. Why would they issue one straight away to me? Anyway, we got to Yangon. We flew to Yangon. Well, I think Sue had arrived a few days earlier, staying with her family, and then I arrived about on the Sunday, and they were there to meet me. And I think slightly to Sue's disappointment, I just breezed through the immigration without any difficulty whatsoever with this visa. Anyway. And of course, the moment I arrived, it was whirlwind because, okay, you drop your things off at the hotel, Chris, but we're going to do the following things. And it's still only 6 o'clock in the morning. We're going to go to the main historic site in Rangoon, in Yangon, which is Shwedagon, which is this fabulous pagoda, which I'm sure you saw, Lucy, this literally gold-covered pagoda, which is a place of pilgrimage. And I was privileged to go there very early in the morning, walk, you know, barefoot along the marble floors, and then sort of whisked off for for breakfast and then for other meetings later in the day and preparing talks for when we flew off to Mandalay the first thing the next morning. And from that moment on, it was just a whirlwind of immersing myself in the sounds and the heat and the atmosphere of Burma. And it's that very special light that's there. And it's just the people and the vibrancy of the colors. And just following that historic route up to Mandalay with all the history that's associated with that, and then back to Yangon and up to Lake Inlay as well, and places such as that. So we saw the great sort of tourist sites and Bagan, which is the original capital, the very original capital, which has, I think, over 2,000, more than that, pagodas. So that's a very special area historically. But it's, as I mentioned before, it's when we visited Mandalay, did the ward round there, talked to the doctors there, we saw this marked discrepancy between the facilities that were available and the caliber of the staff. But no consultants, juniors particularly, you know, there's registrar equivalents, and also the nursing staff. As with most hospitals, but here and most dermatology departments, it was the nursing staff who really knew what was going on. And, you know, they had the list of all the patients that had been seen and spoke very eloquently about that. And the same in Yangon as well. And it was that wanting to make a difference. You know, here's the people that we could work with very closely and using our knowledge and our contacts, I guess, to help in collaboration improve the skincare delivery in that country. And of course, what's present in Yangon, although that might not be optimal by our standards, we certainly knew for a fact that once one moved away from the big cities, it would be almost non-existent. And as I mentioned, that's how we then started to talk about how we could organize a meeting, which, you know, an international meeting, which no one had ever done before. But I guess it was the optimism that we've shared for this venture ever since the beginning, that the very fact that no one had ever organized a meeting there, we would have to get permission to do it. We had no funding. Would we be able to get people interested in getting on a plane and flying out to Yangon? And that's even before we knew it was about, as what happened eventually, is that we got there as COVID was closing in around the whole of Myanmar. But we got in and out before the whole place was literally shut down. But we were getting phone calls and people saying, well, I don't know if it's safe to change planes in the Bangkok, etc. You know, I think we had conversations. I think you and I had conversations, Lucy.
Yeah. Well, my head of nursing definitely wanted to confirm I'd come back within one piece with no quarantining required.
Absolutely. And so pleased you are back in one piece for sure.
Maybe, Sue, do you want to talk a little bit more about our educational ventures, of which the meeting is one of several, really, and then we can go into the research and the other things that we've done and the things that we plan to do as well.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Absolutely, Chris. No, it was wonderful to hear your accounts of, you know, your reflection of your first trip to Burma, because, you know, I was equally nervous, not nervous, but, you know, sort of, how am I going to, is he going to come through the immigration, as he said, you know, and how am I going to entertain him? How am I going to, where do I, you know, show him around, all of that? But, you know, everything flowed naturally and we had a lot of fun and also a lot of worthwhile activities, and actually really got to know the local dermatology residents, consultants, and very importantly, as you said, nurses, because they were really very impressive. You know, when we had the meeting with the whole department in order to identify what the unmet needs are, because for us that was really crucial to have that solid partnership with the local dermatology community, and also to, you know, design and plan our objectives and projects based on the unmet needs. Otherwise, it's absolutely pointless. Time and again, there's been, you know, so many international sort of, I guess, NGOs and other organizations coming into Burma and elsewhere with an agenda, with a preset agenda, which is actually a no-no from the get-go. But yes, yeah, so going back to the BSI education you know, as Chris mentioned, education research leading to excellence in clinical care, really. So education-wise, one of the proudest moments was that first international dermatology meeting held in Yangon in February of last year, very successfully. And not just the dermatologists, dermatology consultants, registrars and nurses, but also GPs attended, you know, the master's physicians in tropical medicine also attended, and a few other sort of allied healthcare professionals also came along. So that was the real success of that. And at the end of that meeting on the fourth day, we had the, you know, the BSI roundtable, because sustainability was really key for us to run this successfully. You know, ensuring that the local Myanmar dermatology community is empowered to take this on, to lead this on in partnership with us. So at the roundtable, you were there, Lucy, along with Rebecca Penza-Hick, who's the president of the BDNG, of course, and along with the Myanmar dermatologists, not just from Yangon, but also from the district general hospital equivalent, or we call it township hospitals, outside of the capital, as well as, you know, industry partners who provided the funding through their corporate social responsibility funding stream, and also the, you know, the BSI trustees, along with the dermatology registrars and some of the speakers, as well as the IFD chair, Dr. Claire Fuller, as well. So that was really successful, and we identified what the key objectives are. For education, research, as well as clinical services. So in terms of education, we felt that that international meeting to be held every year might be a little bit too much. And, you know, the first meeting was fantastic and a great success, but, you know, it did take a lot of organizing to do, and thanks to the BAD for helping support with the organization. So we plan to then hold the main meeting, as we call it, every other year, with more dedicated workshops in between. So our then immediate plan, as soon as we got back, was starting to draft out the program for the workshops to go back, well, should have been February of this year. But of course, you know, the COVID and the coup. So essentially, that sort of revised, you know, not or postponed rather than scratch off, because it makes us even more determined that we can make it a real success out of this. So the workshops were to hold the psoriasis, eczema, and allergy dedicated workshops in Burma, and also the Global Psoriasis Atlas research project that we've started, sort of collaborating with the local Myanmar dermatologists, to be fully incorporated and into the three dermatology departments in Burma as well. So that was the plan. So then we thought, after the COVID, we thought, okay, let's do the webinar series instead. And that was in progress when the coup then took place in February. And then the other part of the education was about the nursing education. This is something that both Chris and I are very passionate about. And we've had discussions with you and Rebecca and various other nursing colleagues over the past year. And in fact, we had the Ministry of Health in Myanmar, the pre-coup Ministry of Health in Burma, to be collaborating with us. Actually, we had a really positive call with them, and it was about educating predominantly the community nurses, because they are the mainstay of the healthcare in the community, as well as skin care. So the plan was to provide this virtual educational platform where we provide regular virtual webinar series or lectures and workshops, actually, to the community nurses, because the head of the nursing teams and the midwife teams under the Ministry of Health already signed up to this, and we had it in progress. And again, the coup took place. And the other thing was about post, you know, more of specialist dermatology nursing training. And there is a huge appetite, actually, speaking to, and I'm sure you had the sense too, Lucy, that, you know, all the nurses were really keen to learn a lot more. And that was one of the highlights of that BSI meeting, the workshops that you guys conducted. That was just incredible, extremely well received, and they wanted more of that. So we also had that in mind to conduct further workshops and so on. And then just, I guess, you know, in further educational platforms that are about undergraduate curriculum and postgraduate curriculum. So we were then put in touch with the Royal Society of Royal College of GPs, who were working in Burma on the medical education curricula. And we then started working with them on these things at that time. That was the education. Now, I think that Chris could come in maybe on the research side of the projects that we were working on. You know, there are four main ones, but hopefully you can expand further on this.
Yeah, I think the other thing just to add to what Sue has said is that we were able to work with other societies, such as the International Society of Atopic Dermatitis, the British Society of Paediatric Dermatology, working with Professor Carsten Flohr, who accompanied us, well, came to our, was one of the speakers at the meeting in Yangon last year, and, you know, to get fellowships for, one registrar in dermatology from Myanmar, and one young consultant to, as it turns out, to have a virtual attendance at the International Society of Atopic Dermatitis meeting this year, and then the BSPD meeting, and hopefully if they are allowed to travel, to actually come and visit some departments in the UK, such as Oxford, Birmingham, and at St John's. And then two registrars from Myanmar were successful in being and awarded fellowships from the European Society for Dermatological Research, the ESDR, to allow them to travel to the ESDR meeting in Bordeaux in September 2019. That was a very positive experience for them and also for the people who were their mentors. And that's helped to, as we will discuss, generate potential research projects. So the idea is that, you know, to be able to facilitate research in that country, and for them, for the Myanmar dermatologists to be leading on that, and for us just to be helping, guided, and give advice. But the idea is for them to do that. But for the research itself, though, which is linked very closely with education, there are, yes, about three or four projects. I mean, there's many more that we can think of, new ones virtually every day. But when we visited there in 2018, we became aware that there's a very debilitating and difficult to treat deep fungal infection, predominantly deep fungal, infection called mycetoma, which is a neglected tropical disease. And looking at the WHO site for this, it's a WHO recognized NTD, neglected tropical disease. It doesn't occur in Myanmar, according to the WHO, but we certainly saw cases. We became aware of many more. And this is a condition which is as a consequence of penetration into usually the foot of these fungal material, and the diagnosis is often left very late, usually in young people who are agricultural workers. They're barefooted working in the fields, and often when it's left too late, it's not managed, it's not reparable, and sometimes leads to amputation. So it's important to recognize, diagnose, recognize early on. And we're able to get some funding through the European Academy of Dermatology and Venereology, and also the International Foundation of Dermatology, for a registrar from the UK to set up a project which we called Macadamia, which is looking at mycetoma and also chromoblastomycosis and going out there into the field. Of course, that's not going to happen as the way that we envisage it, but there is another registrar who's going to take forward some research in Sudan, where mycetoma is very common, and the learnings from that work will help us when we can get back into Myanmar to be able to develop that diagnostic and early recognition program. The second program was around pemphigus. One of the speakers we invited last time was Professor Schmidt from Lübeck, Germany, world expert on pemphigus vulgaris. And certainly when we visited there in 2018 and again in 2019, pemphigus seems surprisingly common in that country. Don't have the facilities to treat as probably as optimally as we can in the UK. And there was opportunities to develop a immunodiagnostic service. And that's where one, if not both of those fellows from the ESDR were interested in going to Lübeck, learning how to set up an immunodiagnostic service, and then going back to Myanmar and setting that up. Of course, that's been put in abeyance, but certainly Professor Zillikens and Professor Schmidt from Lübeck, both of whom are world experts in this disease, very keen to be involved in A, setting up a diagnostic service, and B, doing some research on the different subtypes of pemphigus out there. And then other ambitious plans as about doing a skin disease survey. We know virtually nothing about the prevalence or the epidemiology of skin disease in the country. And sort of on the back of work of the Global Psoriasis Atlas that I'm privileged to be the director of, we were initially planning to do a psoriasis survey. We said, well, if we're going to do it on psoriasis, why not just look at all skin disease? And we've had very advanced plans to do that work. Probably into the end of this year, beginning of next year, we're doing pilot studies, cross-sectional surveys in different parts of Myanmar to then do the definitive study, working with the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And so there's lots of opportunity, lots of things that can be done, and a huge willingness from Myanmar healthcare workers to be working with us, because even the skin disease survey will require nursing input as well as dermatologist input.
Thank you. I mean, that's an incredible amount of work to have achieved in a short space of time. And I totally agree that I think when we did our nurse education day, and Rebecca Penza-Hick, who's BDNG president, and myself, we went with two other nurses who were called Shirley, so they became affectionately known as the Shirleys. We sort of ran sort of didactic lectures in the morning and then workstations in the afternoon. And I think for us, we learned as much as we taught, because actually learning how you adjust, you know, whereas normally we would teach scalp regimes, as in apply this, wash it off after an hour, apply that, actually to then try to adapt that to a situation where there may be minimal amounts of water, and maybe a lot of your patients have got very gorgeous, thick, long hair, is completely different than the average patient I would see on our day centre. And again, I think when we did the water tour as well, there was a patient there with pemphigus as well. And we were told that the patient was having topical antibiotics applied, which to us was very foreign, but of course makes perfect sense if that's actually the only topical you can, you know, you are able to obtain. And also nursing patients rather on cotton sheets, whereas we would nurse them on Exudry, they were being nursed on sort of tarpaulin or plastic sheet. And again, makes complete sense because you're stopping the skin. But yeah, I think for myself, never having been in that situation before, it was eye-opening.
Absolutely, Lucy. Thank you for sharing that, because I recall very well that hot afternoon that you all had to walk across the road from the lecture theatre at the University of Nursing after your workshop, just before your workshops, to across to Yangon General Hospital. So no, really great to hear that experience, and you touched on a really great point, because you know one of the aims is to ensure mutually beneficial sort of projects, really, so that we and others from the UK and international dermatology community can learn from Burma as much as we share our experiences and expertise with them. So it's really absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
And you've mentioned about the coup that's obviously happened. I think that's received very little press coverage in the UK, unsurprisingly, as there's been a lot of other things going on. But I just wondered if you wanted to just touch on how that has changed healthcare or is affecting healthcare on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the military, so as of, you know, well, since the 2011 if I remember it correctly, actually, the exact year, but Aung San Suu Kyi, the lady who won the Nobel Peace Prize, you know, who's the daughter of the martyr, as you call him, General Aung San, who obtained the independence back from the British back in 1948. So she has been the people's elected leader, and she was put under house arrest for many, many years, 20 years and so on. But sort of in the, you know, in 2011 or 15, I can't remember the exact year, but she won the landslide victory. And under her leadership and the civilian government, there has been incredible progress really for Burma. Burma was open up to the world, even though it was pseudo-democratic because the military still had a large number of seats in the parliament. So it wasn't exactly the full, you know, a true democracy, but we did have a lot of progress. We did make a lot of progress. And then, so in Burma, some people sort of, there were rumors about the coup was going to take place after another general election back in November 2020. Again, her party won with the landslide, and so people were celebrating, but shortly, you know, there was rumor emerging. But nobody really actually anticipated this to really happen. And then on the 1st of February, the military coup then announced on the state-owned media in Burma that, you know, the country's sent to a state of emergency. There's been fraudulent voting back in November 2020. And therefore, apparently, it is their right to put all the officially elected leaders under house arrest and in prison, some of them, and arrested, tortured, etc. So following the coup, mainly the healthcare professionals, the emergency doctors in Burma, led a campaign called the Civil Disobedience Movement, or CDM, it's known as. So that's where they have, you know, incredible sense of unity and solidarity, where the whole nation came together and peacefully protested against the military coup. But of course, it was a matter of time before they started opening, shooting everybody, initially with rubber bullets, but then later on ammunition, army, you know, ammunitions, like real ammunitions as well. So as a result, the healthcare system collapsed overnight. All the governmental hospitals, the UM1, the Yangon General Hospital, the North Okalaba General Hospital, where UM2 is based, as well as all the other township hospitals were shut down. And the doctors were in hiding because they would be exposed to you know, huge risks of being arrested and tortured and even death in a lot of circumstances. So, and as a result, of course, all the specialist services are no longer existent. So then what do we do? I remember calling Chris straight away as soon as I saw the news on the 1st of February. I cried, actually, because not just because of what it means to what we have achieved through the BSI, but also for our colleagues, for our friends, and also I still have my family there. So it's actually life-changing. And very tragically, it means that the clock has been turned back over a decade to how it was under the military dictatorship. So people are really struggling. There's no movement in terms of, you know, if you're a Burmese citizen and you want to get out of the country, you can't do that. And it's a hugely complex politics, and that in itself is another trilogy, I guess. But just to illustrate how we had to reshuffle and become, you know, innovative and think laterally about how we're going to keep going with the BSI. So we are part of this Tropical Health and Education Trust working group, and Chris currently chair the advocacy group of that THET partnership, I guess. And we came together and we thought about, you know, how can we help our colleagues back home in Burma through support, you know, practical supports clinically as well as education-wise. But of course, all the research projects had to come to a grinding halt because that's really not at the forefront of the agenda at the moment. But that's not to say that we're not planning in terms of planning the study design, protocol, et cetera. And that's still going on in the background between us with other collaborators. But at the forefront of our agenda becomes providing practical clinical guidelines for the frontline healthcare workers, because the healthcare system is now relying on nurses, medical students, other healthcare workers, because doctors are unfortunately in hiding for their own safety. And so then, you know, how are they going to manage if they see somebody with, you know, widespread blisters or somebody who's known to have psoriasis come in with erythroderma? What do they do? So that becomes very important. And that's something that, you know, both Chris and I are passionate about. Just because of the coup, just because there are gunshot wounds, it doesn't mean that, you know, other skin problems and other healthcare problems don't occur, as Chris termed it, as essential emergency skincare or healthcare, really. So that's really something that we're both passionate about. And about, what, you know, speaking up for dermatology, standing up for dermatology, because you, as you can imagine, you know, there are competing interests here. And of course it is important, but it is equally important to not neglect people with skin disease as well. So that's one thing. The other thing is about providing educational lectures and so on to the frontline healthcare workers. So we're still in the process of ensuring that that is going to be delivered to the right people at the right time. And also, sort of, you know, macadamia, for example, the research project that Chris mentioned about, Dr. O'Sullivan was due to go out there, go to Burma to conduct the research, but through the help of Dr. Claire Fuller and Professor Rod Hay, we are now rescheduling her to go somewhere else in Africa, just so that she still learns about mycetoma and chromoblastomycosis, but also conduct a research project that will hopefully be beneficial for Burma one day when she can actually go back out there to Burma. And in a way, she may be better equipped with, you know, better knowledge and experience within this field, and she can really make a difference to the people of Burma, hopefully. And there are a lot of other examples, but I wonder, I'm sure Chris has a lot to add to that, so I just bring him back into the conversation again.
No, well, I mean, there's a lot more to be said, but I think you said pretty much most of it, Sue, so there's not very much more for me to add to that, actually. there's a lot of other things that I could discuss, but I think it's, there's a lot of things going on. Of course, we've been plunged into not just skincare, but it's also politics, and that's been the choreographed approach of diplomacy, which is not quite what we would like. But you know, there's a lot of dreadful things happening out there in Myanmar, which you can't really divorce from what's happening to the healthcare, because the healthcare workers themselves are being specifically targeted. We've heard some very tough stories about. You know, there's about 80 healthcare workers who've been detained, imprisoned, and still in prison. And of course, the hospitals themselves have been pillaged. A lot of the equipment has been stolen from hospitals. So they're really back to where they were several years ago. It's starting again from the beginning. But as Sue says, we've kept skincare on the agenda. It's not This is what I would call essential emergency skin care or health care. And it's analogous to what's happened in this country in a different way, but analogous to what's happened with COVID, because all of the resources have gone in the NHS to managing COVID. And of course, you think, but at the same time, there's a tremendous backlog, as we're seeing now, with waiting lists of other conditions, everything from myocardial infarctions to severe psoriasis. And it's the same in Myanmar. There's a lot of focus and a lot of resource gone into trying to manage, quite rightly, gunshot wounds. But at the same time, the other healthcare needs are still there, and we've got to rethink how that can be managed. And as Sue said, it's a really involving the nurses, community nurses, other healthcare workers to manage severe skin disease in at least a supportive manner, and to manage the patient in the short term, at least until they can get experienced dermatological care. Well, I suppose, yeah, so that's been an interesting journey. It's not one that we envisaged, and it's hopefully one that will end in the not too distant future. But at the same time, and as Sue says, and I absolutely agree with it, out of these needs, out of these unmet needs have come opportunities, rethinking how skincare can be delivered, rethinking how dermatology can be in the medical school curriculum, rethinking how skincare can be recognized as something that's as important as other healthcare needs. And working with THET, the Tropical Health Education Trust, has been really a very positive experience. And also our experience of dealing with some very senior people in British medicine and in the government, all of whom are hugely supportive of what we're trying to do, and of course tangentially supportive of the Burma Skincare Initiative. So wherever we've gone, whoever we've talked to, I think that the story we've recounted to you today is a very, I believe, absolutely, it's a very empowering story. It's one that sort of draws you in and shows that what passion and focus can do. And you may say, well, what's our long-term goal? Well, our long-term goal, as you would have heard at that roundtable meeting we had in Yangon back on the 24th of February 2020, was that we will be back there for sure. And we will be, and hopefully we'll set up a regional dermatology training and research centre, which can deliver all those imperatives from the Burma Skincare Initiative, education and research, leading to high quality clinical care. That's our aim. We can model it on what they've done so successfully in Moshi in Tanzania with the ILDS, and the BAD and the BDNG have been involved with that. And that's the goal. It's just been put on, it's not moving quite as quickly as it has done previously, but it's still there in our 10-year plan. And the coup's got in the way, but it's not going to prevent us getting a regional dermatology training center. And it's for dermatology care. It's not just about doctors, it's about nurses as well.
Absolutely. It makes us even more determined that we will make it happen one day. So, Lucy, you better be prepared to come back out there again one day.
Yes. Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. It's been really inspiring speaking to you both and seeing how much you've achieved and how you've adapted in light of the circumstances as well. And I just want to thank you very much for sharing your time with us this afternoon and sharing your experiences working in Burma and with the BSI. So thank you very much. And we look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, and also look forward to working with you too.
Yeah, thank you, Lucy. And thank you to the BDNG. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information and details of our upcoming events, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcasts, which are coming soon.